Well met, friends. I'm Steph Midlock.
And I'm Jude Vase.
Welcome to Atherbeth, a podcast exploring the lengthy lectures of Tolkien's Legendarium. Let's see, do we have any corrections cul-de-sac to start with? I think we do.
Just one, or a collections of corrections.
Ooh.
We seem incapable over the last episode and this episode of remembering that Andreth is the person who is in this conversation with Finrod, and Adonel is the person that she knew and sometimes refers to. We sort of use those two names interchangeably, especially in this episode. So, sorry.
We are definitely not going to be able to note each time we do it, because we do it all the time. And you guys, I'm really sorry. Thank you for sticking
start with
us.
A's. They're both wise women. It's an easy mistake to make.
Yeah, maybe name with some different letters, Tolkien, okay? Let's throw a Jody in there, you know? Maybe a Tiffany.
Francine.
Yeah, Francine. Why not? Francine the wise woman. I'm into it.
So before we get into the episode, we wanted to talk a little bit about the Tolkien Maker of Middle-earth exhibit that we went to last weekend. Was it really last weekend? Sheesh.
I think it might have been 2 weekends ago. But
two weekends ago. Very recently, Steph and I were in New York in the same state at the same time for the exhibit at the Morgan Library in New York City. So we wanted to talk a little bit about that because it was really great and we had a really good time.
It was awesome. I mean, not only was it just really wonderful to see you, Jude, in person. It was like crazy that you're not just a flat screen to me or just a microphone person, but actually a real living person. That was awesome. But to get to experience that beautiful exhibition with you and with our friends was just great.
Yeah.
So the
exhibit, it's...
Yeah, go ahead. No, please. Oh, we got so excited. Please.
The exhibition itself was absolutely fantastic. The Morgan is a beautiful, beautiful library, and they put on a really great exhibit. The stuff they had on display was phenomenal. They had pieces from every aspect of his life, from photographs of his family when he was a little kid, early artwork and watercolors from every stage of his creative life, all the way up through writing and paintings and drawings that he had done through every stage of development of Middle-earth. There was stuff that I was expecting to see and was familiar with, as well as some stuff I had never seen before and was totally unfamiliar with and was real blown away with. There was a whole wall of Numenorean stuff, like little ink drawings of like Numenorean tree work and filigree and stuff like that that I had never seen before and were super beautiful. And I spent a good couple of minutes staring at those and reading the descriptions of those and really, really enjoyed seeing those.
Yeah, it just, there's something very magical about being in such close proximity to something that, you know, Tolkien created with his own hand. Things scratched out on, you know, old, you know, students' exams that were, he was too bored at grading. So his mind wandered and created these beautiful things. And all of these layers, you know, coming together to create this beautiful legendarium that is so important to so many people. It's really like kind of spiritual and magical to be with those items and to get to kind of lean in close and really take a look at everything. I really loved all the maps. I'm a map geek.
And the maps are great.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. Like the amount of detail, and they're so beautifully done. Even the kind of scratchier ones are beautiful. It was so cool.
Yeah, I really like the one that was like five sheets of paper taped and pinned together and heavily amended and edited and written over and very much a development piece, a work in progress piece. It was really interesting to see that one. I like that one.
Yeah, you kind of see the wheels turning a little bit, you know, going from what definitely. We know now and knowing a little bit about his kind of process. It's such a special collection and it's so rare, you know, watercolor, as I've said before, watercolors are just want to degrade immediately. So they're really, it's very special to see them. if you have a chance to get to New York to the Morgan Library and Museum, I would highly recommend it. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I cannot emphasize enough how much I recommend that you do it. It's not at all an expensive exhibit to see. I think it's even free on Fridays, I think I read.
Nice.
So really, if you're in New York City, certainly you have no excuse. Get down there and see it. If you have any ability to get out to New York to see it, and you're a Tolkien fan, I really highly, highly encourage it because it's absolutely gorgeous. And the lunch is very, very on theme and tasty.
Oh my goodness. Yes. Their cafe has a Hobbit lunch that you can get. It's amazing. It comes on like a big thick wood board that's like really beautiful. And it's all kinds of like little morsels,
Hobbity
like a bit
bites.
Of roast beef and some chicken salad and, you know, some lovely mince pies. It's great.
That mince pie was bomb.
Oh my God.
I could
it was
eat
probably
like
the best
four
one I've
of
ever
those.
Had. Do not tell my mother, my British mother, because she'll be devastated, but that was real good. We also had a cup of mead that came with it, which I'm not going to lie, I did not love. It was, but I enjoyed that it was there.
I'm glad that you guys drank it and enjoyed it. I do not drink, so I did not partake.
It was mostly apple juice, but yes, I totally get that. It was awesome. It was just such a fun kind of thing for us to do between seeing the exhibit and heading into the symposium. And before we launch into the symposium, one more thing I want to say is, you know, even if you can't get to New York to see the exhibition, the exhibition catalog is beautiful and excellent and contains like all of these, you know, really nice images of all these watercolors and maps and wonderful, excellent essays. Mm-hmm. So that's another great way to kind of access the exhibit if you can't make it to New York.
Yep.
Yeah.
So after we walked through the exhibit, we did get to go to the symposium, the Tolkien and Inspiration, a multidisciplinary symposium, which was just fantastic. Really, really great to see in person. The keynote was by John Garth, who has written some great books, has some forthcoming stuff, has written some great papers. And he gave a piece called, read a paper called The Great Wave, How Tolkien Reinvented Atlantis, which was fascinating. He has a piece in a new book that just came out called Subcreating Arda, where he does some textual analysis and some biographical analysis on Tolkien to kind of try and pick apart how Tolkien may have come up with the music of Arda, what may have inspired him. And he uses a very similar process to try and pinpoint the down to like the day where Tolkien started writing The Lost Road and started and kind of invented Numenor and all that stuff. Really, really fascinating. His process, you can tell he's got a real process now for sort of crossing biographical with exegetical sort of streams here to kind of hone in on where Tolkien's thought process was. And it was a fascinating paper to see how he did this work and to sort of get into Tolkien's head a little bit. I really loved that piece. It was very exciting.
It was, absolutely. And I, you know, had just finished his audiobook that he reads. So to be in the same room with his voice, I was like, ooh, this is kind of exciting. It felt cool. I was way too shy to go up to him and tell him how cool I think he is, but you're very cool. Sorry, John. We'll have to fan boy and girl another time, but it was great.
Yeah.
Next, the second lecture that was given was a paper by Nicholas Burns from New York University called But the Beauty of Mithril Did Not Tarnish Tolkien, Material Culture, and the Made Object. And in this piece, Nicholas kind of described material culture as a place where aesthetics and ordinary life meet. And he made the point that while the living spaces and the great halls of Tolkien's writings are kind of filled with these beautiful, amazing treasures, they're also places where the inhabitants lived their everyday, mundane lives. And he gave examples such as like Meduseld in Edoras, which is a place of great beauty, but also a hall where domestic life kind of plays out in front of your eyes. So he sort of talked about that as an interesting intersection. And I think, to me, it sort of hit home. Jude and I, in an early episode, maybe even the first episode of Atherbeth, we talked about the depth that Middle-earth and Tolkien's Legendarium has and how it feels so real. Maybe it was the second episode, actually, when we talked about Numenor, but that this feels real. And I really think that this kind of intersection material culture of ordinary life and beautiful and like beauty meeting is part of what makes it feel so real.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was great. That was really interesting.
Yeah.
After that, there was a piece called Homo Amory, Tolkien's Beowulf and the Lord of the Rings that was given by Christopher Vaccaro from the University of Vermont. And in this paper, Vaccaro kind of asks you to look deeper at the relationship between Sam and Frodo in The Lord of the Rings. He discussed a term called Homo Amory, which is described as kind of a place where friendship and love overlap. It's not necessarily a sexual relationship. It's friendship and love. And he kind of drew similarities between the relationship of Beowulf and King Hrothgar, and he sort of examined the kind of the meat of his piece was examining that parting of Frodo and Sam at the Grey Havens, and you know, Sam sort of standing there into the night watching Frodo kind of disappear into the horizon. And he talks about that kind of deep love that Sam has for Frodo, and it's sort of a secret love that he's going to sort of hold forever, even though he knows he's probably not going to see Frodo again. He's still going to hold on to that. So this piece kind of asks you to look a little bit deeper at those relationships, you know, just to kind of look beyond what's just on the paper.
Yeah, that was an interesting one. I know Tolkien's relationship with Beowulf is really interesting, and I'm not as familiar with Beowulf as I probably should be, all things considered, and the analysis he did, the digging into the relationships in Beowulf, was really interesting.
Absolutely, yeah.
The next one was one I really enjoyed. Kristen Larson is a professor of astronomy at Central Connecticut State University, and she went through she read a paper called "And Menilmakar and His Shining Belt, J.R. Tolkien, the Amateur Astronomer," and looked at all the ways in which Tolkien references real astronomical phenomena in his works, and kind of ask the question, how accurate is he? What real stars and constellations is he referring to? And it was really, really interesting to see how frequently he is referencing real constellations and real stars and the work people have done to try and map the things he's referring to real constellations. And the answer seems to be more often than not, he's very, very accurate. When he describes the movement of the stars, he's very, very frequently being quite literal and quite true to reality and the way that stars actually move. And even in some of his sort of more mythological things, like the rounding of the earth and things like that, there's evidence to suggest he was doing some more. He was still paying close attention to astronomical phenomenon. So it was very cool. That was one of my favorites. She did a lot of really interesting, a lot of interesting research, and she was a really great speaker.
Yeah, absolutely. That one was great. She mentioned, I don't know if any of you have read, you know, the Father Christmas letters from Tolkien, but even those, you know, the writings of, you know, Polar Bear and stuff really mirror what was actually going on. Like they talk about in the 1927 letter, they talk about a big comet. And when she did research, Kristen found that there was a really big comet that year. And so it really was based on real life. And again, that sort of leads to that feeling of realness. It's very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the last piece was given by Leslie Donovan from the University of New Mexico, and it's called Teaching Tolkien and the 21st Century. And in her presentation, she sort of described her experience teaching the works of Tolkien to students over the years and sort of outlined the array of, sort of overlapping and cross-departmental interests that Tolkien kindles in students. Leslie discussed how her students continue to find new threads to kind of tug at, you know, from environmentalism to human rights and social justice to the ethical use of power and misuse of power. And it was, for me, it was very inspiring to hear her talk about the many ways that Tolkien continues to inspire new groups of students every single year and ask them to kind of look at the world around them a little more deeply. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. She also talked about the explosive growth of the field of Tolkien studies, the way that it started out as sort of a fringe, and it's become increasingly a rich and vibrant field, which is I very strongly believe and agree with. And so that was cool to hear, talk about. That one really made me nostalgic for the classes that I took at Mythgard and really made me wish that I had the time right now to be taking more of them. So
yeah, yeah, it'll still be there for you. That's the great thing about Tolkien is, you know, he's there.
Yeah,
he's waiting.
Yep.
That's all right. And it kind of made me very excited about what we're doing on Atherbeth. Not me so much, but you mostly.
Yeah.
Just kind of adding to this.
One of the things I love about Atherbeth is being able to stay engaged with this stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Mythgard is a great organization for diving into this stuff and interacting with other people that are passionate about it. And I really enjoyed the classes that I took there. So if you are interested in taking classes and being engaged with other people that are learning, want to learn about it, I highly recommend you look into it. So
absolutely.
That was the symposium, and we both really enjoyed it.
Yeah. So something else to mention, too, is that this symposium was kind of given in partnership with the New York Tolkien Conference and Fellowship, which I am going to be embarrassed to say that it was not on my radar until we were in New York City that this wonderful thing was going on. I'm so embarrassed. I'm trying to kind of get into the Tolkien community a little bit more. And this was, we got to exchange some really nice tweets with those guys. And again, I was too shy to go up and say hi, which I'm totally regretting now, but they all seem like such a lovely group of people, that I'm definitely going to keep my eye out for kind of some of their future stuff and try to get involved because they seem awesome.
Yeah. I definitely feel, bummed that we didn't track that. I wish that I had had the time to stick around New York for another day and do the New York Tolkien Convention. Because that, I mean, I was already there.
I
would love to have been able to stick around for another day.
Yeah.
But
well, we're new. We're the newbies on the block. So we're excited to learn more and hopefully go to all of these different things and get a chance to meet more Tolkien enthusiasts.
Yeah. Over the next year, I definitely would like to be doing more stuff like this, because the Morgan this trip was really exciting, and I'd like to be doing a little more like that. So we'll see.
Yeah. So if you want to, if you're a Tolkien person of interest or whatever, interested in Tolkien, hit us up on social media, get involved with our Discord. We'd love to hear from you, and we want to get more involved with your beautiful community. So there you go.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was great. Jude, thank you so much for traveling first of all, suggesting that we do this together and also, making the effort to travel all the way out there from Ohio. That was rad. It was so cool to see you.
You flew a little further than I did. You came from California.
Well, boy, are my arms tired. No, I don't know. I should make some kind of like as the Nazgul flies joke, but I can't. I'm old and tired.
Yeah. So, moving on, about this episode, this is the second half of our Atherbeth episode. I finished editing this the other day, and I have a few notes about it before we dive in. So yeah, looking back on this episode, this was an enormous episode, and I think I underestimated how much outlining was necessary for it. So someday I do want to come back and touch on a few points here. I do someday want to cover Estelle in a little more depth. I do feel like we gave that somewhat short shrift. It's a very important topic, and I don't feel like we necessarily gave that its full due.
So the topic of hope and what that means to elven spirituality. Yeah.
And then elven spirituality in general. Mm-hmm. I feel like we actually covered that pretty decently, but I'm mostly giving you fair warning that you're not off the hook on that one.
No.
I'm going to come back around to that one in the future.
No, that's good. That's good.
Not anytime soon.
I feel like I'm starting to get my teeth into it, but you know, as I read the Silmarillion and I'm getting a little bit more background, I think I'm definitely going to want to hear more about it. So please give me more.
Yeah, but not in the immediate future. We've got a slight tonal shift in the future. and then we'll come back around to it in a little bit. So
nice. That's great. So Jude, can you tell us like where we left off? Because that was a month ago and I don't remember where we were.
Yeah, where we left off. Finrod and Andreth had just been discussing. They had just finished discussing death, and Andreth had made some fairly snarky remarks. And you had said, who among us has not drunk some wine? And made some snarky remarks. And the conversation between them is about to take a sharp transition. So they've sort of wrapped up their conversation. They've wrapped up their metaphysical conversation, and it's about to kind of change directions. So you can kind of go into this. It's a good break point.
Mm-hmm. It's good to remember, too, that Finrod, of course, is an elven dude. He's been around a long time. And
in case you're dropping in here inexplicably in the middle of a two-parter.
For some reason, weirdo.
Context. Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Finrod, elven dude, totally cool. Everyone loves him. He's a super cool guy. And then Andreth is a human, wise woman who... has got some love issues, but you know, we're not going to blame her for that. You're probably going to hear about that more in this episode. So stay tuned.
Yep.
Well, we've got many paths to tread. So let's begin. Next section is where Andreth leaves her phone in the bathroom of a bar she was at earlier in the evening. That's where we're at in her level.
And so I think maybe you are picking up on something correct here, and that's that Andreth comes across pretty pissed about the difference between elves and men.
Oh my gosh, me too.
Yeah. And Finrod has a line. While they're talking, she has a line where she says, "Across the gulf that divides our kindreds," said Andreth, "is there no bridge but mere words?" And then she wept again.
What? She's so drunk, she's crying now.
She's not drunk.
I know. I'm just kidding.
But it turns out that what she's upset about is specifically... there's two weird things. There's two things about this section. So... first, what she's upset about is Agnor, that is Finrod's brother.
What? Why does he get brought into all this? Does she have a crush on him?
She was in love with Agnor in her youth and didn't believe that it was reciprocated and was a little bitter about that. But it was. And this is what Finrod tells her, is that...
Agnor liked her?
She's fiercely bitter that the differing of their kinds made that love impossible. She believes that that's why Agnor didn't really see her as a potential suitor. And she's right and wrong in the sense that it's not that Agnor didn't love her because she was human. It's that Agnor did love her to the point that he will never take a wife. And when he dies... which Finrod knows will be soon, because apparently some elves have foresight, and Finrod is one of those elves, and he has a sense that this Dagor Bragalach is coming and has foreseen that his brother is going to die soon. He knows that Agnor will not return to the living for sorrow of Andreth. That's
what?
Grim and Wait, tragic.
Why didn't they just get together? What happened?
Well, that's what's coming.
What? This is...
And that's because... So a couple of things. One is elves do not take wives or children in times of war because they believe that children should be raised with both parents together throughout the whole child-rearing process. And they believe that raising children is part of the function of marriage. So they don't... Hello, Catholics.
Oh, boy.
So they don't marry or have children in times of war. And
he married
such,
Tolkien married in a time of war.
And since neither he nor his brother believed that the siege would last, they believed they would never have done it. Further, both he and his brother believed that marriages between elves and men were fraught and only for high purposes and, quote, hard at the end.
Yeah.
That is to say, and when you look back on it, most of the pairings between elves and men went pretty shitty. They were difficult times and were rough rides for everyone involved.
But I mean, wouldn't you rather have a rough ride, but also, you know, have your love than just die and your soul will never come back to the world? Like,
so
Agnor, what the heck? Dude, emo.
So Agnor's choice was that he would rather leave her to live her life undisturbed than to draw her into some tragic fate.
Oh, buddy.
Yeah.
I just feel like that's one person making a choice for both of them. Should be a conversation or an Athrabeth, a discussion, if you will.
Yeah. So it's a weird section. So here's the second thing that's really super weird about this section. Throughout this whole section, and only in this section, Finrod refers to Andreth as Adaneth, which is Sindarin for a mortal woman.
Okay. Well, maybe it's like a fun pet name.
I don't know what to make of that. I don't have a hot take on that. that's an observation. It feels...
Is he trying to remind her?
Yeah, that's kind of my feeling, is maybe he's trying to like really drive that nail home that like... I mean, it feels cruel to be like...
Like sort of an insult?
I don't think it's an insult, but it feels like he's emphasizing the point, the mortal point. But God, like after this conversation, like she knows she's mortal. You guys have just been arguing about it for like an hour. Like, I really don't. Like I said, I don't have a hot take here. I honestly don't know what the fuck was going on in there. Maybe it, for all I know, this could be a textual thing. Like in the two versions of the paper, this section is in one and not the other. And in that one version of the paper, he calls her Adaneth throughout the paper and it did survive into the other one. I don't know, but it's weird. And I don't like it. I don't like it.
You don't like it?
No, I don't like that he calls her Adaneth. It's like one of the few things about the Athrabeth that I don't like. It feels patronizing a little bit. And like he's trying to kind of like hammer her over the head with her mortality as a way to sort of make her get what he's saying.
But he's like so nice. He wouldn't do that, right?
No, he wouldn't. That's my point.
Yeah. So it must be something else. Maybe it's like, I don't know what it would be. I mean, because isn't that considered a gift, right? To be mortal?
Yeah. I mean, I think the charitable interpretation is that this is like a title he uses.
Okay.
And he's being weirdly formal in this situation. Because there's also a weird thing in this section where he switches to thou.
Hmm.
But
okay.
I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah. So the next part of the Athrabeth, that's the end of the actual conversation.
The whole conversation is about death.
Yeah.
The whole thing. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Cool.
The next section is the commentary. The commentary basically goes back over the conversation that was just had. And it does some really cool stuff. So what it does is the Athelbeth goes over Finrod's point of view of this debate. And it bullet points, walks through, lays out the assumptions that Finrod is making. It lays out where he starts, where he's starting from, the assumptions he's working with, and then some of the starting beliefs he's holding, and then kind of walks through some of the arguments that he's making. It's really interesting. And this is written by Tolkien, but from an external standpoint.
But an in-world standpoint or an out-of-world? Out-of-world. Okay.
So it starts out with things like, these are the facts, air quotes, as Finrod would have understood them.
Okay.
There are certain things in this world that have to be accepted as facts, is how it starts. The existence of elves, the existence of the Valar, things like that. And then with regards to King Finrod, it must be understood that he starts with certain basic beliefs, which he would have said were derived from one or more of these sources: his created nature, angelic instruction, thought, and experience. So it basically constructs the basis for Finrod's point of view in the debate.
Okay.
And it's super interesting the way that he lays out this information. The things he knows, these are like the facts of his argument, the sort of the pillars of his argument. And some of these are things like, there is a god, how incarnates work, Hroa and Fea are a thing, that the separation of Hroa and Fea is unnatural, that elvish immortality is bounded within the world. And then he starts expanding that into some of the more arguments that Finrod makes. So stuff like the some of the stuff about reincarnation that we talked about. Mm-hmm. So touches on that very briefly. It talks very briefly about his beliefs about why the Fea of men are different. Since men die without accident, whether they will do so or not, their Fea must have a different relation to time. The elves believed, though they had no certain information, that the Fea of men, if disembodied, left time sooner or later and never returned.
The Fea of men. So the spirit of men left time? What does that mean? What do you mean left time?
Left existence.
Okay. Right.
They went out of space-time, basically. They left Ea.
Okay. Right. Because they can't be reborn like elves can.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And then he goes in to go over some of the points of that Finrod and Andreth discuss and sort of break down how Finrod gets to his point of view there. It's super interesting to get Tolkien sort of breaking down these points. It's really interesting reading. The commentary is some of the best parts of the Athelbeth, from a like, if you're looking to like get to the actual like philosophical meat of the essay,
okay,
the commentary is some of the best stuff because it gets you to the actual like bullet point goodness.
Cool.
Fastest. And then we get down to the Tale of Odin Elf. Once we get through this part, I'm going to go over sort of my crucial bullet points of all this sort of philosophical hot stuff. But I want to talk about the Tale of Odin Elf because it's fucking wild.
Okay.
Oh, and then there's notes on the commentary too. And then there's footnotes on the commentary.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Dude, editing.
This is going to be a fun one to edit.
Oh no, not you, Tolkien.
Oh. Yeah.
Tolkien needs to learn editing.
Yeah. Okay. So the Tale of Odin Elf has its own framing device, mm-hmm. which is it's a longer tale. It's a piece of lore that was edited under Numenorean influence and then repeated later on to kind of make the Numenoreans look bad. Or something like that. Anyway, it has a It reminds me very much of some of the stories about like the Council of Nicaea and stuff, where you have this edited doctrine presented to, you have scripture edited and presented to advance a political ideology. So the Tale of Odno, what does it say? It basically says that way back in the day when men first woke up, they were all hanging out, and there's this voice, and the voice tells them how to do a few basic things, but not a lot of things. And it says, go figure it out for yourself. It's more fun that way.
Wake up, sleepyheads.
Like a dad, you know, it's a built character. And they're sort of fucking around in the dark trying to figure these things out when this other character shows up. And it says, ignore that other voice. That's the voice of the dark.
Ooh, the voice of the dark. Yeah. So scary.
I'm the creator of the world. And if you keep listening to that voice, you're gonna die and it's gonna be bad. So worship me and I'll teach you stuff. And it teaches them all kinds of stuff, like how to farm and wear clothes and do all kinds of weird stuff. So they listen to this new voice.
Oh, no.
That other voice crops up again and says, you probably shouldn't do that, guys, just FYI. And they ignore the voice. And they continue to worship this new voice. And a little time goes on and they continue to worship it. And then I think there's like they rebuke the original voice one more time, and finally there's like a sacrifice or something. I don't know.
It's not the kind of thing you forget.
So anyway, they eventually, it gets to a point where the first voice says, the first voice was never heard again save once. In the stillness of the night it spoke, saying, ye have abjured me, but ye remain mine. I gave you life. Now it shall be shortened, and each of you in a little while shall come to me to learn who is your Lord, the one ye worship, or I who made him.
Oh my gosh, it's like a basic, it's what they're saying.
So basically this is a classic temptation tale. They are tempted away from God by the devil, and their lives are shortened and made harder.
Well, frankly, the Lord was not helping them very much, okay? I can tell you 1,000% I would go with the other voice. I'd be like, oh, sweet, cool, let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I gotta say, I'm not super sympathetic.
To who? To Eru? To God?
No, I'm with you on that one. Eru did not pitch a very good deal.
Yeah.
Did not pitch himself very well in that scenario. I do like the frame that it's supposed to make. I don't know. I like the frame that it's like the Numenoreans trying to make Morgoth worshiping look bad or something like that.
Okay.
It's funny to me. So that's kind of the content of the Atherbeth. I want to go over now and sort of talk about what are the pieces of it that I think are the most important.
Wait, I'm sorry, hold on. So wait, did Adnell tell that story? Or like, why is that her tale?
So the Tale of Adnell is a piece of lore that was passed down by Adnell through Atherbeth, or through Andreth.
Okay, so the girl who's hanging out with Finrod talking about stuff in the Atherbeth was friends with Adnell, and Adnell's like, girl, I got a story for you, let me tell you. But it might be propaganda. But anyway, here it is. And then we have it in. Okay, so that's all right. So that's the last part of the Atherbeth. Gotcha.
Yeah. And then there's a glossary and a whole bunch of pages of footnotes. And that's the end of it.
Okay, so we've got feature film. We've got director's commentary. We've got deleted scenes / bonus material. Is that what you're telling me? This is the DVD.
Yes, of the Atherbeth. Is exactly what's going on.
Yay! Yes. I want the title screen to be one of those sexy fan pictures of that dude playing the harp. Do-do-do-do-do. And the same song over and over again forever.
Nice.
Boop-boop-boop-boop-boop-boop. Forever.
So the last thing I want to do is talk about the... what are the pieces of this that I think are important? What makes it important as a for looking at Tolkien's Middle Earth, and what's important about it? So first and foremost, this is an in-universe document. Nothing presented here is canonically true in the sense that you can't say that, as is made clear in the commentary, these are all the things that Finrod believes and Finrod understands to be facts. But he's careful not to say that these are absolute facts from an authorial standpoint. So that doesn't mean that they aren't true, but you have to kind of keep them within that framework. But to me, that's okay, because what that means that these are effectively the philosophical and religious beliefs of the elves, which is fucking cool. Like, I'm on board with that. That's super interesting to me.
Okay.
So the first thing that I think is really interesting about the Atherbeth. So I don't know if it's come up in this podcast, but my bachelor's degree is in philosophy and religion.
I think it might have, but if not, yeah, Jude's all about that stuff.
I think this is the most complete and compelling view of elven spirituality that we've ever found in Tolkien's writing. Finrod espouses an abbreviated, but what I think is a pretty complete view of elven, a snapshot sort of, if you will, of elven spirituality. The idea that they're bounded within Arda, the idea of Estil, of hope for some salvation beyond the end of Arda, the idea of how their souls fit with their bodies, with the idea of the resurrection beyond death. He hits all the main points. The unnaturalness of the separation of the body, the existence of God and angelic, all the major stuff that you need to know about what the elves believed from a sort of on a spiritual standpoint, religious, because they don't have a religion, but they do have a spiritual life.
Okay.
They believe things and about things that we would call religious things. And that's all in the Atherbeth. It's all there.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. And for me, my specific area of interest that I have been sort of digging into for the master's thesis I'm going to someday write is sort of that range, sort of the spirituality and eschatology of Middle-earth. So this piece obviously is a centerpiece of it. There's very no other thing I found has as much information about that subject as the Atherbeth. Lots of other interesting pieces, but certainly nothing that has this much density of information that's relevant to me. The next important thing is the original state of men is discussed here in ways that it's not treated anywhere else. There's a couple of different versions presented. Finrod's version is the sort of the Silmarillion version, which we get a recap of here. This is also the only place we get this idea of the fundamental differences of the Fëa. This is not something that gets raised anywhere else.
That the Fëa of man and elves are different.
Yeah, that they have a different relation to time, and the whole idea of men having this memory of things from outside Fëa is not something that's raised in the Silmarillion anywhere or anywhere else that I could find. It's a really unique idea that's only seen here. Similarly, Andreth's beliefs are just bug wild and are not raised anywhere else. That the idea that men are true incarnates, that the separation of their Fe and Hroa is unnatural, and that they were meant to be immortal is, completely unique to this piece. Additionally, it's also, and that also feeds into the next major point, the idea that men had an that might have something to do with the men's original function in Arda. That is to repair or remake Arda.
Mm.
This is also, I don't want to say, Arda remade, Arda healed comes up in a few other places, but certainly it is not treated with the discussed at the same kind of length as anywhere else. Finrod's long speeches about the possibility of Arda being remade and the role of the children in it and what that could mean for the elves is unique to the Athrobeth.
Huh, that's really cool.
Yeah. The idea that this could be a salvation for the elves and the idea and the discussion of the hope of the elves is nowhere else discussed. And it's super interesting to me that the idea that the Estil is a really important concept in Tolkien's writing. I want to dive into that while we're here because I didn't cover it while we were doing it before. And I want to get into it a little bit. So I'm going to pull up the quote about it because it's not just hope. Finrod says, "That is one thing that men call hope. Amdir, we call it, looking up. But there is another which is founded deeper. Estil, we call it, that is trust. It is not defeated by the ways of the world, for it does not come from experience, but from our nature and first being. If we are indeed Eruhin, the children of the One, then he will not suffer himself to be deprived of his own, not by any enemy, not even by ourselves. This is the last foundation of Estil, which we keep even when we contemplate the end. For all his designs, the issue must be for his children's joy. Amdir, you have not, you say. Does no Estil at all abide?"
Hmm.
So Amdir would be looking up for something. He describes as looking up.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be, man, I hope the ice cream truck comes around the corner. Whereas Estil ties really closely into the concept of eucatastrophe.
Okay.
The turn to joy. It's holding out that hope that things will work.
Like in the face of certain doom, things are going to work out.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Gotcha. May I ask you a question?
Yeah.
And tell me if this question would be better placed later, but
no.
Is it then like, it's just such a lovely kind of, I don't know if it's a coincidence or not, but isn't Aragorn called Estil when he lives, and mm-hmm. that means hope, right?
Yeah, yeah, he is. And it is appropriate that he's called that because he is called Estil, and it's appropriate that he's called that because he's sort of the culmination of this long chain of prophecy and so much else to try and heal the lines of men and the half-elven and all these things and bring peace to the Third Age. So, yeah, it makes sense that that's why he would have that name.
Cool.
And then Estil, they also talk about the coming of Eru into the world, which I think is, I mean, we've talked about how bug nuts that is.
Yeah.
It's a weird one.
Yeah, that is a weird one. I mean, does that come up anywhere else? That seems so. That it seems so overtly Christian.
No, not to my knowledge. No, there's a footnote about it that talks a little bit about like how weird it is and that it doesn't really come up anywhere else.
Wait, Tolkien says it's himself that it's weird.
No, Christopher Tolkien has some footnotes about it, but it's a super weird one. You can definitely tell that it's Tolkien sort of dipping his toe a little bit into the idea of what if there were a little more of overt Catholicism in here.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the framing device, he gets away with not giving it too much. What's the word I'm looking for here? Like authorial weight, I guess is the best way to put it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Yeah.
Because it is kind of blatant, right?
Yeah. And then the last thing that this piece really deals with is the fall of men, that they have two very differing views of what the fall of men looked like. Obviously, Finrod, again, has a more conservative view because he really holds the Silmarillion view of what the gift of men is. And he believes that if there was a fall of some kind, it was making death feared as opposed to creating death or something like that.
Okay.
Because he doesn't fundamentally believe that Morgoth can alter the fate of an entire people. And we talked about how Andreth rejected that.
Right.
And the ways in which she did.
And her thing was like, no, we messed something up and we got corrupted.
Yeah, and she has the whole tale of... Because she's got the tale of Odinel, that whole thing.
Gotcha. Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. I think that's one of my favorite parts of the whole thing is Odinel's rebuttal to that, where she throws that back in his face and says,
Andreth.
You can't... Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Andreth throws that back in his face and says, we're true incarnates too. You can't expect us to... You know, are we true incarnates or not? Like... You say it's unnatural to be separated from your body. Why is it not unnatural for us to be separated from ours?
Mm.
I really like that part because it's making Finrod justify his own beliefs and why they aren't applied to men.
It's evening really like the score one. A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I like seeing him, like, I like that you can see the gears turning in his head in the text. You can see him like cranking around trying to like wrap his head around that counter argument. It's good.
I like that. It seems it makes Finrod seem very humble, that he's not above, like, you know, being like, yeah, sure, okay, let's entertain that thought for a second.
Yeah,
it's cool.
Yeah, throughout the whole piece, he comes off as always willing to entertain every counter argument, every pushback. The only thing, like I said, the only thing that he ever explicitly says, like, nah, step back on, is when she suggests that the enemy has already won.
Okay.
And is the master of the world. That's the only thing he won't entertain. Everything else he's open to debate on. And I really like that about him.
Yeah, because if he could never admit that, because then it can't be saved, right? And the whole thing is that, like, if there is hope, because Arda could be fixed, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, he makes that point. He says, if Morgoth has that power, then what are we doing here?
Right. Gotcha. Then what is this? Why are we even here? Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So.
Oh, it's so interesting.
Yeah. So that's the Athrabeth. There's a lot I didn't cover. I could have gone into quite a bit more detail, but we're already coming in on 2 hours here. So
it is a little bit esoteric for me because I'm not as big a fanboy of Tolkien as you are. You know, it's
one of the more esoteric pieces,
yeah,
for sure.
Do you think is this a piece that, like, would any of our, like, heroes have known about this piece? Because it is an in-world piece of writing. Not really, probably, right?
I don't know. I bet you Bilbo's read it.
That dude's read everything. All right.
I mean,
Gandalf
thought...
probably read it, we think.
Oh, sure. Sure, Gandalf, for sure. I don't know. It's an interesting question.
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, how pervasive were these ideas?
Yeah, the framing device is not clear on whether this is a document or if this is just a frame around an actual conversation and then some commentary on the frame.
Gotcha.
If you get what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, either way, I would totally listen to a Finrod Andreth podcast. I'm just going to put that out there.
Yeah, me too. That'd be real snarky. Andreth is real cynical.
I like that about her. That's cool. You gotta be, right? You gotta be. You gotta keep it real.
I really like Andreth. I think she's great. And I like that her snark is never minimized. I don't like that it's because of a dude, but, you know.
You think she's being snarky because of that dude that she liked? Face,
I think it's implied in the piece that part of why she's so foul-tempered with Finrod, and part of why she's so bitter about the difference between elves and men's fates as far as immortality and death, is because she believes it separated her and Egnor.
Oh.
So
yeah,
yeah, I don't.
It doesn't pass the Bechdel test, but it is cool.
Yeah, yeah. So like I said, I don't. As motivations for a character goes, it's a little trite and cliche, but I do like that she's still a great character and a little bit of a boring backstory. Don't bother me much. But it is a classic tragic backstory. And I do think it's interesting in so much as it interestingly informs the other men elf pairings that we do get.
Yeah, that is interesting.
That there are others who considered going down that road and didn't because they could sense the portentousness of that road and said hard pass.
Yeah.
They knew that crossing the streams was a dangerous thing to do and declined to do it. I think that's interesting.
I think it's a cop out. I know that I'm supposed to be like, oh, he made a sacrifice so that she could live her life. But clearly she's pissed about it, you know? They should have just talked about it.
No, I don't disagree with you there. Yeah.
Yeah, I get it, though.
I also don't love that it's always a man and a she-elf.
Oh, sure, instead of the other way around. That would have been another way around situation. Right? It would have been a human woman with a dude elf.
Yeah, that would have been better to me.
That would have been interesting.
Not better, but it would have been good to add a little variety.
Yeah, so. I mean, do you think it was... I don't know, but maybe it wasn't supposed to be a poke at, like, the sexes and more like, look, history's repeating itself over and over again in the exact same way. It's kind of creepy.
I don't know. I don't know.
Who knows?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Well, now I know at least what the heck the Atherbeth is. It's good. It's a talk about death. That's what you should have opened with. We're going to talk about what people think about death.
Well, I think it's more than that. I do think it's more than that, though. Yes, death is the sort of the axis on through which they're exploring these subjects.
Yeah.
But I think it's a... I think it's an exploration of spirituality. And Finrod is talking about what he believes. Finrod's talking about a lot more than just death. He's talking about what he believes the world is and what he believes the world could be and how it could be saved. And Andreth is talking about death a lot. But she's also talking about, I don't know. I feel like Andreth is talking a lot more about the fallen state of men.
Mm-hmm.
She's not as so much death is a consequence of that, but I think she's a lot more interested in the fact that men are broken and fallen than she is in the fact that they die.
Mm.
Like the fact that they die is it's a fact.
Yeah.
The history of how that happened is much more interesting to the both of them than the fact that men die. They both agree on that, and there's some debate as to whether or not that's supposed to happen, but they're both more interested. They both get a lot more interested in how it got there and what it would mean if it wasn't supposed to be that way.
Do you think that, let's see, so okay, sorry, thinking about the time, so he wrote this in 59. Did these thoughts, do you think like we have any evidence that these thoughts went through his mind when he was talking about, or when he wrote like The Lord of the Rings, and he kind of talks about the elves diminishing and going into the West as the rise, you know, at the age of man kind of sets in at the end of the third age? I mean, was that already?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah.
He had written Lord of the Rings at that point.
Okay.
And this was, so remember the timeline was he finished The Lord of the Rings and then went back and was starting to write these other things like Osanwe Kanta and Laws and Customs and then this. So he knew that this was, I think a lot of the writing of Lord of the Rings was in his mind. He knew what those characters were going to do and he knew what their fates were. And he had already sort of developed this melancholy atmosphere that you get in the end of The Lord of the Rings. And I think that informed a lot about this melancholy atmosphere that you get in this piece. And I think that may have helped also inform the death ahead of the elves. Because you don't see that quite so much in like the Silmarillion.
Mm-hmm.
That isn't a thing that comes up all that much. It isn't treated quite as bluntly. The idea that the elves are glued to Arda and are stuck there until it dies and then it is going to die. Like, it's not treated quite so bluntly, but you do see it a lot more in later pieces. You do see him exploring the more philosophical and spiritual stuff after Lord of the Rings, which I think is cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Neat.
Yeah.
Well, his own spirituality was very important to him. Him being Tolkien, of course.
Yeah.
So I can see one of my favorites. Want to do this?
Fun fact for you Atherbeth listeners: one of my favorite weird things that Tolkien ever did was translate a bunch of Catholic prayers into Quenya. And that was a unreleased. I may have the recording somewhere. I don't know. Never going to be released, though.
No.
That was the first thing Steph and I ever recorded together to get a feel for how this Atherbeth thing would work. We talked about those Catholic prayers in Quenya.
Maybe we could talk about them again at a later
we should.
Date, when now that we know what we're doing more.
Yeah.
Slightly.
I really love those because they're super interesting. Anyway, I'm not going to get into them too much. But
tantalizing, though. I want to know more.
They're fascinating. And they say a whole lot about his relationship to the relationship of his Catholicism to Middle-earth. So
that's really cool.
Yeah.
Well, perhaps it's an Atherbeth for another day.
Badumch.
Oh boy. Well, that was great.
Yeah, I'm glad that we were able to talk about it. This was a much bigger thing to take on than I anticipated, and I think there's probably more to say about it, and I'm sure we'll come back to some of the subjects within the Atherbeth at a later date, but I'm reasonably satisfied that I gave an okay overview of things, and I hope that people enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think so, absolutely. And I would say to our listeners, and remind myself of it, of course, that, you know, if you ever have any questions about anything you hear on the show, or if you want to talk with us or Jude more about any of these things to find out more, you can always contact us through social media, but also on our Discord, where Jude fields lots of interesting questions. And so I think as I let this discussion kind of sink in a little bit, I'm sure I'll come up with some questions too, because it is pretty dense. But I thought you did a great job.
Thank you.
Yeah. Cool, dude. Well, thanks. Right. I guess I'm going to go think about death and spirituality and all kinds of cool stuff. And then I'm going to argue with myself. And then I'm going to watch the DVD commentary of something. It's going to be amazing.
Sounds like a plan.
The road may go ever on, but this episode is over.
In gratitude for putting up with several months of elf souls and my philosophical bullshit, next month we'll be back with an episode all about the horses of Middle-earth, ranked by goodness.
Yay! Horse time! So excited. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes. Please, 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 pretty please. It helps increase our visibility. You can find us on the web at www.podcast.atherbeth.com. You can find the show on Twitter at @Atherbeth_cast. Jude can be found at @AremiticJude, and I can be found at The North Four. Title music is Lord of the Devil Rings by Pony Music, courtesy of Pond 5. Thanks for listening!